Hello and welcome back to the Project 99 podcast. It is April 3rd, 2022.
What was the best April Fool's joke that you saw or heard? Did anybody do any around you?
I don't think so. Just the one that you sent me. And yeah. Like when I read it, my mom texted me. She was like, did you hear about Putin getting killed? And I was like, wait a minute, never mind. Like literally split second. And I was like, you ain't getting me, bitch.
I was hoping at least there was a split second of what?
There was.
Yeah.
I think that was the only one I heard, though.
Like, your brother didn't text me back for so long that I just, like, was like, April Fool's before he responded to me. And I was like, well, and you said you didn't get me, and I was like, well, I can hope. And then I was like, on both counts, and I got you and the Putin one. But, yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of any other ones.
The one lady at work got abused. Like, everybody pranked her for some reason. And one person told her, like, she cooks lunch for us every day in crock pots. And somebody came in and was like, something's burning in that crock pot. You better go check. It's there's smoke coming from it. She came running out there. She was like, April Fool's. I was like, oh, that was a pretty good one. And then one lady took a tampon and put like red food coloring on it.
Oh.
Yeah. And put it in a cup that you drink from. Ew. And I don't know where she put it, but she's like, well, wonder who's going to find this little gem.
Ooh, that is not funny. That is so gross.
That was beyond. And then, I don't know what was the other ones. Like, people did a couple of them, but it was pretty funny. So, and then the same lady that did a crock pot, too. Another employee went and hid under her desk. And when you walk into the office, like, the back of her desk is facing the front where you walk in. So until she went around the corner to sit at her desk, she would not have known somebody was hiding under her desk. So that was Sean comes out and he goes, there's going to be a scream in a minute, just so you know. And I was like, why? He's like, I just wanted to warn you ahead of time.
What the fuck?
And I hear this.
So. Damn, you had a much more exciting April Fool's Day than I did.
Yep. I didn't plan any. I looked at the calendar. I was like, oh, damn, it's April Fool's. I didn't even realize like it was happening. But anyhow. So.
Well, apparently you got to be careful about which joke she makes because you don't want to get smacked.
Yeah. So obviously everybody's talked about that. And I'll just say that of the responses I've heard, like Russell Brand's rant about it was amazing. Like, even if you agree or disagree with Russell Brand, which some of his stuff, like, especially on the vaccine, the pandemic stuff, I'm like, well, I mean, is he, like, getting paid to represent some point of view or whatever? But he's, like, poetic and philosophic and insane. And it's just, I just like listening to him. Like, especially his accent's great.
I've always loved Russell Brand.
You know? And I was proud of the fact that when he... you know, his accent that I pegged where he was from because he has the whiff, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, that if you get a chance, listen to his, and I think his comment is valuable because, you know, a lot of people are taking sides on how they feel about it. And when I saw it, I didn't even know if it was for real.
Yeah. I didn't know if it was faked.
But even if it wasn't faked, I will say that I have suspicions that everything on the media, I mean, television, radio, whatever, it's steered to convey a message that elites want conveyed. From every entertainment show you watch, to the news, to Oscar award shows, like every bit of it, if it's not staged, the aftermath of commentary is completely scripted to convey a message to you about what is good and what is bad. And what I liked about Russell Brand's rant was that he didn't, really take a side. He was asking us as human beings to evaluate it and to think about it, why we feel about it, regardless of how you felt when you saw it.
I like how he was talking about how even a spectacle as big as the Oscars in the dystopian society that we live in now cannot sustain itself in a bubble. Like, holy shit, the real world and real world problems got right into this. What did he call it? A magnificent glittered turd.
Yes.
Yeah, he's right. He's right about that for sure. I think that all the time, though. When people were talking, first of all, people were like, did you see the Oscars? And I was like, no. No, I did not watch a bunch of fucking rich people give each other awards and pats on the back. Yeah. For movies I've probably never seen, I'm fucking good on that. I'm going to go sit in my room and watch fucking Batman on VHS again.
Yeah.
So, who the fuck cares? And I don't know. Then I get on Facebook and it's like all anybody is talking about. And I'm like, wow, I wish I could just once open my Facebook feed and see this many people talking about shit that actually mattered.
Right.
Like,
right.
I try not to, like, be that guy because I don't want people to, you know, like, oh, you think you're so much better than everybody else? Like, no, I mean, I get participating in celebrity drama to an extent, but it's like, this shit was just everywhere and everybody has an opinion on it. And I'm
right.
I just don't care.
And that's what he says in his rant is that how much do you, like, stop and think about it.
How much do you actually care? Yeah, that was my opinion too. I was just like, I really don't give a shit at all.
Like Facebook and Twitter and people getting on there is like so performative.
Like it's really just like everybody's got to have an opinion, and I'm just like, man, maybe it's because I have like kind of low self-esteem at times. But I'm like, what makes you think that anyone gives a shit about your analysis of the situation? Like, who are you? If a relationship therapist or some kind of psychiatrist gave some kind of official analysis of it, I might be interested to listen to a professional opinion on the situation.
Right.
Or even like Russell Brand talking about it because he was a part of Hollywood and has been to the Oscars and talking about how it's in this bubble. Like that was interesting. But just like people on the outside that have no experience in any of it.
Well,
than like they just want to give their opinion because it was like a very human reaction. You know, like that's some shit that would happen on our level. That's like some trailer park shit. Like, you talking bad about my wife, boy? Smack your teeth out your mouth. Like, is that why we're talking about it? Like,
well, I mean, I think people talk about everything on Facebook and Twitter, and people feel like they have to form an opinion almost instantly and stick by their opinion no matter how much they're proven that they're wrong. It's just a thing now. Like, and I blame a lot of it on capitalism and, you know, the mass marketing of opinion.
Oh, for sure.
You know, from Oprah, you know, when Oprah Winfrey and all these talk shows started out in the 80s and people got on there, like, if you notice, it was like people that you knew in your real life started to talk like they were on a talk show or something.
I know, yeah, it's weird. Well, that's like, wait, after what? We watched the Russell Brand video, I kind of wanted to see what Jim Carrey said about it because I'm like, first of all, I don't want to live on a fucking planet where people can't take jokes anymore. I mean, there's really nothing that can't be joked about for me. I like comedians like Ricky Gervais and Dave Chappelle, and they've both been under attack for making crude jokes, but I just feel like I don't care what the joke is. If it's not for me personally, I just won't listen to that comedian. But like, in no way do I think people should be canceled or fucking physically assaulted over any form of comedy. Like, please do not destroy comedy. Like, holy shit. And I was laughing the other day with my friend Drew because when we were kids in 2005, when YouTube came out, we were like 11, 12 years old, and we had a camera and made a lot of really fucking awful bits because we were children. And it reminded me of that comedian Bo Burnham. He did that movie Inside, and he like sings all these different songs in it. And at one point he says, I wrote offensive shit and I said it. And he's like, you know, singing about like, oh, please forgive me. Like, don't cancel me for shit that I said before. And I'm like, but that's how it is. You know what I mean? Like, I've done that. I've definitely said a lot of really fucking offensive jokes. And it's like, you learn from it. But I just don't think I've ever heard a comedian, even in Dave Chappelle and all the shit that he got. I don't know. I mean, it's fucking comedy. Like, leave it alone.
Right. And I think what's happening is Western society, and I will peg this on Western society, because only we have the capacity to sterilize our environment, right? To the point of, and even between the wealthy and elite and common folk, like if you think just 100 years ago, maybe even 50 years ago, depending on where you were, people died and they had the funeral in their house.
Yeah.
Family came to the home where that person lived and they were in a coffin in their living room. People took pictures of the person in the cat. Like, all these things that are so horrible and taboo, and it's like, oh my God, I would never buy a house that someone died in. And it's like, really? I mean, we're so sanitized with the idea of death. Like, and
in America, we have this unique ability to be able, you're right, to sterilize a lot of things in our society, especially things that we consume. And I guess you can kind of relate that to capitalism, because like I said, if you don't like a comedian, you can just stop listening to them. So it's like, it always is so strange that, you know, like when people hated on Dave Chappelle, that they talked about him so much, because I'm like, you know, there's a lot of comedians I've heard make jokes that I'm like, man, I didn't like that joke. Like, that, I feel like that guy's like actually just hates women, or like that wasn't funny. So I just don't listen to him anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like basically not really boycotting, but just like not participating anymore. And I feel like, why do people in this country neglect to realize that their participation is the one thing that they have.
Exactly.
And if you don't like it, you can just make it go away by,
right,
not,
by not
looking
listening
at
to
it. Yeah.
Right. No, but you're exactly right. And I say that about the dollar. Like, we're forced to live in a capitalist society. We can't change it. It's never going to change. But we can vote with our freaking dollar.
Right, yeah.
And, like, people don't think about where they spend their money.
And I know people always laugh at me because I'm like, no, I don't shop at Walmart. Like, maybe on a very rare occasion. Because, you know, I'm a human being. If it's, like, if I'm already at Walmart with someone, I'm not going to, like, not buy it and make a special trip somewhere else. But if I'm choosing to go to the grocery store, I always go to Kroger because it's Union.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. People are like, oh, you get this at Walmart. I'm like, yeah, I don't shop at Walmart. They're not Union. Mm-hmm. And people just look at me like that's being, like, extremist. And I'm like, mm-hmm. No, it's, like, the one thing that I can do.
Right.
It costs me nothing to just choose to support one business over another. Like,
yeah, right. I mean, and so back to the Will Smith thing, I think that, you know, the whole idea that there's a good guy and a bad guy and we have to pick a side is just another point of the whole messaging system. And back whenever, if you know, when I talked to a lot of people about politics and they were like, who? What? I think, what are these people's minds filled with that they don't know anything about? Sports, right? It was almost the people that I dealt with. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but the people that I dealt with would be like, remember a play from a game in like 1972, this one pass that this guy, and I'm like, how the fuck do they, or stats, they would remember stats of certain players, but they didn't know who their state representative was,
right,
who their senator was.
It's just like, all about what's
don't
important.
Don't you think that's more important to you than fucking sports? Like, to that, I'm not saying you can't enjoy a game, but I'm saying in the gallery of things in your life that are important, you don't think who represents you and makes your laws is more important than a fucking football player? So, but I realized at some point that sports is a metaphor for violence. It's a metaphor for tribalism. You pick your tribe.
Right.
You go there with your face paint on, which a lot of people actually do.
Mm-hmm.
You cheer your team on. You hate on the other team. You talk shit. You know what I mean? And it's like a metaphorical way for people to express that tribalism. And it doesn't do any good for society, really. It used to be like, if you taught your kid a sport, you're like, well, you have to have good sportsmanship. So if you win, you have to be a humble winner. That was a big part of sports.
Right.
Now there's no such thing as that. Parents go to games and they beat up other parents. Like, to me, sports is fucking poison. So when the whole thing happened with Colin Kaepernick, when he started the kneeling to protest police brutality, and all of that like spillover happened, and then there was immediate like ridicule and he shouldn't be doing that, and this big anti-Kaepernick movement happened, and Trump was coming into the fore then, and I was like, okay, stop and think, what is the messaging here? What, this is the first anti-sports across, like, let's just get rid of sports. And I'm like, wait a minute, sports has served the purpose of politics by distracting people. So politics can be as dirty as possible and nobody even pays attention because the next Super Bowl is coming up. So what was the reason for it? And I realized, because the people in power wanted to shift all of the hostility and aggression that people got out at sports games into the political environment. Sports was sucking away that. It was giving some kind of comfort to people who wanted to be tribal. They had to get rid of it so that they could shift. And it has, absolutely. Because now, if you ask a lot of people that are in like the middle to lower economic bracket who used to care about sports, you ask them about politics and all of a sudden they care about politics. And it wasn't all Trump. You know what I'm saying? Right. Trump told him, stop paying attention to sports. The NFL.
I have met more people. I mean, I'm like you. I've always been interested in talking about politics and learning about history and stuff and trying to have conversations with people like that, because I'm not like a source of fucking, you know, I'm not some all-knowing being. But the best way I found to learn about things is to discuss them with other people. So it's like, I'm always trying to be like, hey, have you heard about this? Like, you know, maybe discussing it with another person will make me understand it better. And I also ran into that. Like, people aren't interested in it. They don't know anything about it. Don't really have any interest in talking about it or learning about it. I mean, my very best friend, Duran, constantly says when I try to talk about politics or anything there, she's like, yeah, I don't give a shit about that stuff. I just don't care. It's depressing. I don't think anything like fucking matters about it. Like, I don't care. And I'm like, okay, like, fair. Like, so we don't talk about it, because she's just like, her opinion of it is that, you know, there's no changing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always the same fucking circus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, like, fair. So I don't talk to her about it. But I found that a lot of those people have suddenly become avid Trump supporters. Right, exactly. And I'm like, this is strange. Like, mm-hmm. her mom being one of them. I've mm-hmm. never, my entire life, knew her to be involved in any politics at all. Mm-hmm. And then became like a really big Trump supporter. I'm like, this is very shocking to
me.
Well,
if you talk to a lot of people in a lower socioeconomic level, and you ask them, like, why don't you vote? Because a lot of them don't vote.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, well, I don't really know, you know, who the people are. I don't know much about them or what they stand for. And I feel like if I don't know, I really shouldn't participate, which kind of seems like a responsible thing in their mind. But I'm like, do you know how you care about how you get treated at work? Do you know how you care about how you feel when a police officer pulls you over? Do you know who you care, how much you care about? How do you feel about, like, where you live? Should your landlord have to fix the place that you live in to own property? Like, everything in your life. If you know how you feel about what's happening in your life, you can figure out who you want to vote for. You know, not all that they're going to be what they, after you vote for them, okay, that they're
going to
do anything
they say.
Well, I think
that's it. It's just a sense of hopelessness, because it's like, you know, you think that,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, how many times do you have to vote for someone in your situation doesn't approve at all before you realize it just doesn't fucking matter, you know?
So we have a lot of stuff to cover, because we haven't gotten to... have a podcast in a couple weeks, and we're not going to try to catch everything up at one time, but I wanted to talk about the aspect of people in Ukraine and how they have been received in Europe. And everybody in the world has seen the suffering that these people are going through, and their hearts are ripped out. People are donating at record levels.
Not only that, but you know what surprised me the most about all of this is America can shut its fucking mouth about how patriotic it is. Because I have never seen so much patriotism and pride in themselves and their countries and the people of Ukraine.
Right.
I mean, fucking everybody. Mayors, they're like their version of like Miss America or whatever. Like all those fucking people, they're like, we will get a gun and take to the streets.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. And we have fucking draft dodging presidents. Like,
right.
Just our whole pump in our chest, like, we believe in America, we believe in freedom. No, we fucking don't.
Yeah.
If
the
any,
minute
if
we have to, anything consequence comes up,
anything
we
got
to
sacrifice,
yeah.
we are ready to fucking run for the hills.
Yeah,
but these people are fucking truly standing up for their country. And I that's like a beautiful
right.
thing.
It
I
is.
Think.
And I can see why people respect it and why they've gotten the help and the reception that they have, because they were completely a victim of Russia's invasion. And, the only thing that I can say, though, is that for the last 15 years, we've seen, probably 20 years, since we, you know, invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, and there's been wars in Africa and, you know, different countries where people of color fled and ended up on Europe's shores, the response has been quite the opposite of what we've seen for the Ukrainians. We've seen that it is possible for European countries to very quickly establish reception centers, to get medical care for people, to help them with the trauma, to help them to, you know, figure out where they're going to go next, how to get them on a train to where they need to go to. You know, all of these steps have been very carefully, meticulously attended to because of the way that Poland and Germany and all these other countries feel about the people of Ukraine, and that it's not their fault what's happened there and blah, blah, blah. Now, you look at the refugees who have fled, like I said, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya. And they've arrived on the shores in boats, flotillas, and there was one where, you know, they were being held, a group of refugees were being held offshore, and I think by the Italians in the military, and they were basically keeping them at bay from coming on the shore, and some people went out and tried to rescue them, and it's just like, I guess I can't help but ask how much skin color has to do with it. Skin color and the ability to speak English. Because, you know, in Germany, a lot of the rise of the right wing in Germany was perpetuated or put forward, advanced, I should say, by the idea that we are being invaded by a dark foreign element. You know what I mean? The same way that Trump pushed the whole thing about brown-skinned people coming across the border, changing America, Tucker Carlson saying, you know, you've got, you know, these brown people coming here trying to change our culture. And, you know, Europe had a big rash of that whenever brown people was coming on their shores. And so, I don't know, I guess it's something that I don't feel like I've heard people talking about. And I think it's because they're so grateful the Ukrainians are being taken care of that they don't want to throw shade at people that are helping the Ukrainians. And I don't mean to either. I just feel like if I was a person of color who went through an experience where my country was invaded by some Western European fucking country, and I had to flee war after my country was destabilized and it wasn't my goddamn fault, and I get to Europe and I'm like, oh, we don't want you brown people here. And then I see what's happening with the Ukrainians. I'd feel a little fucking salty about it. You know what I'm saying?
No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying for sure.
So, I don't know. There's that.
It's pretty awful. I've been honestly avoiding the news on it because it's just fucking horrifying in every way. And I don't understand how we're like, you know, the preachers of democracy and, you know, hate dictatorships, hate communism, hate all this fucking nonsense. But literally Russia is genociding an entire country of people. And we're just like,
but they haven't gone to Poland yet.
We'll help out, I guess. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Just today I saw in the news, I was reading up about it because I knew we were recording, that they discovered like a mass grave of like 300-400 people, just unarmed civilians. I mean, and they're saying that they're finding these bodies of like women, like raped, beaten, people set on fire. I mean, it's just like, I can't even, it's fucking awful. Yeah, they're genociding an entire country of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then Putin's pulling the whole, oh, it's fake news. You know, I mean, the images are coming out and he's just like, fake news. Like, what the fuck is happening? I mean, it did, and I guess he thinks it's going to work for him, too. But I'm like, I don't understand. I'm glad that other countries are accepting refugees, but, like, what the fuck are we doing? Well, I mean, I don't want to go to war with Russia, either. Right. And I say all the time on this show, like, I'm not the person to be saying what kind of military action we should be taking. Mm. But can't we fucking do something? I mean, are you kidding me? We're literally just letting a dictator, like, destroy another country. Like,
right. And here's the thing.
A democratic country.
Here's the thing. Biden, you know, got on television and openly said, for people that say that we need to do more and we need to have a no-fly zone, don't kid yourselves. A no-fly zone is World War III. Not going to happen. So, okay, even if Biden believes that, and even if he takes that position, if you're sitting at a fucking poker table, are you going to show your hand to the other people at the table like that? You don't fucking do that. I mean, to me, that was completely asinine. He should leave his enemy always wondering what he's going to do. Not say, oh, well, as long as he's, you know, murdering people inside of Ukraine and doesn't cross into NATO territory, you know, he can pretty much do what he's going to do. And we're just going to do sanctions. But here's my thoughts on the matter. If Putin's big thing is, okay, I have nukes, and I'm not afraid to use them, and I'm going to go into Ukraine, and I'm going to do what I want, and all the other countries go, well, it's really sad, and we want to help the Ukrainians, but they're not a member of NATO, so therefore, since they're not a card-carrying member of our club, fuck their country, because we aren't going to get in a nuclear war with Russia. Okay. It wasn't that long ago that another dictator started taking over a country and people tried to appease him because they were afraid of what he would do to their country. And we all know what happened with that. Hitler didn't stop. He kept on going and he kept on going and he kept on going.
Well, that's what I've been saying,
too. What's going to stop Putin from saying, I'm going to go to Poland now?
I feel like people are looking at me like I'm crazy for saying that. But I'm like, Putin is just the next Hitler. And like, people look at you like, oh, you're sad, you're crazy. Like, those things aren't connected at all. Like, you're a conspiracy theorist. And I'm like, how could it be any more fucking clear? Literally, that's what's going to happen. The same fuck. We don't care until he invades Poland. How is that not the exact
same? Yeah, it is appeasement. Same, it's definitely appeasement.
Situation. Like,
and I mean,
he's genociding an entire fucking country of people. It's the same thing. Mm. It's just Putin's not using the word eugenics yet.
Right.
Like, but even they haven't said either. Why the fuck are they in Ukraine? I mean, when they started invading it, they're like, oh, these are just staging, blah, blah, blah. Well, now we fucking know it's not. You're murdering civilians. Like, why are you even here?
Well, Putin has wanted to reintegrate Ukraine into...
I mean, we know that's why, but what has he fucking said about why they're here, justifying their actions at all? Like,
he has told his people that the Ukrainians have bioweapon labs
funded by
the United States.
They're using the weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction lie that Bush used to go into Iraq.
Man, he's just taking all kinds of plays. He's like, let's do WMDs and then scream fake news.
The CIA is not very creative.
Yeah, they use the same shit over and over.
And, you know, the CIA used to be, you know, I think it was actually created by Britain, because the modern day CIA was based off of Britain's version of the CIA. And the idea that any government would control an agency with that kind of power is ridiculous. And, you know, when we talked about the Iran-Contra affair, the fact that, you know, in the 80s, they were already figuring out some way to make the CIA a private corporation with money that nobody could track, that, you know, they've always wanted to prevent the public from knowing what they're doing. They've always. And it's because they're doing criminal activity.
Yeah, now I'm starting to wonder, Trump White House shared a fucking CIA playbook with Putin? Like, what the fuck?
Well,
I mean, not that you couldn't just deduce and figure it out on your own. Because we fucking just read history.
Right.
But, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Biden should be doing. I love that we have the whole gas crisis thing going on here, quote unquote. And if I'm not wrong, didn't Biden appoint a special counsel to investigate why the fuck the gas prices are so high? Because there's literally no reason why they should be this high. Like, the oil prices are not going up.
And he went to Saudi Arabia and asked them to up production, and they've told him no. So, I mean, if anybody wants to hate on people, why don't they hate on the people who have the capacity to up production and lower the prices, which is Saudi Arabia, and they won't do it. Right. Probably because Jared's on the phone with him going, hey, yeah, fuck Biden.
Right.
Go Brandon. So, Here's another thought I had. The Chinese have been working, and probably lots of governments, but let me just speak about the Chinese for a minute. The Chinese have been working on the idea of a super soldier genetically modifying human beings to have the capacity to be super soldiers. Now, most people think that means they're going to modify them so they have night vision, and modify them so they're super strong and super fast and they can take pain and blah, blah, blah. But I haven't heard anybody really talk about them genetically modifying soldiers to be completely, utterly sociopathic.
Yeah, it's kind of like, this is really cool too. Again, when I started watching, I know I reference this all the time, but the Marvel movies don't get enough credit. When I finally watched the whole Avengers series, there's like a, because, you know, like, Captain America's from, like, World War II era, and, like, he's got his friend he goes to war with, Bucky Barnes. And then Bucky Barnes ends up becoming a super soldier, right? Where they, like, basically wipe his brain, and he's a fucking sociopathic killer. And then, like, when he's not the super soldier, the winter soldier, whatever, anymore, he has, like, you know, his brain is completely different. And, like, we saw the U.S. do that. MK Ultra was, like, absolutely an experiment to try to get people's brains to, like, turn off. So they could be this soldier with, like, and people joke about it, like, oh, you say a code word and it activates the agent in a person. Like, that's what we were trying to do. Like, it sounds like crazy shit, but that is what they were trying to do. So, like, you can have a soldier go and do all this stuff, collect important information or whatever. And then when you say this word or do whatever to them, they just go back to how they were with no memory of the shit that they were doing. Mm-hmm. So, like, the whole idea of a super soldier, as crazy as it seems, and you see it in movies and shit, it's not like science fiction. Like, we're trying to do that shit.
Right, exactly.
Like, China's not the only one. Like, we did it.
No, but if you stop and think about it, from a Chinese perspective and a historical perspective, some of the Japanese atrocities committed on the Chinese, in Nanking, for example, you know, bayoneting people's children in front of them, raping people's children in front of them, like just the most horrible things you could possibly think of, like torturing people, like, because the idea is if you terrorize somebody so horrendously and make them in such a state of fear that they just submit because they want it just to stop, like V, you know, the idea of V, like you have to get completely to the point where
V for Vendetta. Yeah. That's why that's one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
And the idea that you have to go you have to get pushed beyond that point where you're just like,
you have to break somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. So for the idea that the Chinese super soldier would be, more than even physically advanced, would be mentally a complete sociopath. You know, China and Russia are big time buddies. They collaborate on all kind of stuff. And I just think, like, are these people that are going in and committing these atrocities against the Ukrainians even Russian soldiers?
Well, I thought that too.
Some of them are, but yeah. Are all of them? Are these mercenaries, quote mercenaries, that have been seen that are not in standard Russian equipment and uniforms, mm-hmm. are they modified, like, is this some kind of experiment?
Well, see, what I thought when, you know, people were talking about like Russia not being behind this, and they don't Russian civilians not being in support of this, and et cetera, like they can't believe the soldiers are doing this shit, and then reports of like people that weren't in military uniforms, and I immediately thought Blackwater. I mean, why do we think that we're the only people that can hire companies like Blackwater?
For sure. And
they have no allegiance to America or anybody else. So, like, there's no doubt in my mind that if Putin thought for a second, like, my soldiers won't do this shit, that he would just pay somebody to do it. And that Blackwater would take the job or any company like that, mm-hmm. which is why they're so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why we fund them. They're no different than funding people like Blackwater by hiring them to do shit is literally no different than, like, funding Al-Qaeda to fight other terrorists.
Well,
like,
and we did that, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's no different. It's absolutely no different. No. Like, you're giving a company money and making them more legitimate and powerful, and then another country could just hire them and use them against us. Like, the fuck are... Like, the U.S. has really learned nothing by the mistakes we've made.
Absolutely not. And that's happening... We talked about this election time. It's happening in intelligence communities where former CIA, former Mossad, former MI6 people, they become private citizens and they go into contracting businesses where they use the connections they've had in Secret Service to sell information, to buy and sell information on people.
Well, even worse, too, and I don't remember what company it was. It may have been Blackwater, but, I mean, they had hired a company. The U.S. government had hired a company, and I don't remember if it was Blackwater or if it was another one of those, like, what was the other one? The Halliburton one. It's like RKB whatever.
Kellogg Brown and Root.
Yeah.
KBR.
Yeah. I don't know if it was them, but... It was one of them, and they got caught at Abu Ghraib interrogating people. Mm-hmm. And even the soldiers on the ground there were like, we can't have this fucking company of people. Like, we don't know them.
Right.
This is sensitive information. These are higher people. Like, even they raised red flags about, like, that this isn't okay. But they fucking did it.
Right.
And we don't know what kind of information they got out of those people.
Absolutely
or
not.
Where it ended up or...
Right. And here's the problem. If Hillary Clinton hires a company, and this happened in the presidential election for in 2016 and also in 2020. So one politician hires an intelligence agent from some country to find all this opposition research, find dirt basically on another person. And then that person who paid that person to get that dirt, they fall out of the running. So then they pick the person they like the most that's left in the mix and give them the information. Ben Carson did that. He hired an Israeli intelligence firm to find out information and then handed over the information he found out to Trump because he liked Trump the best. Oh, and then he was given an appointment in the Trump administration. But the problem with this, like you said, is that when they dig up all this dirt, it's blackmail material. So let's say you hire some, you know, intelligence firm from a foreign country to dig up dirt on Trump to try to stop him from being president, and it doesn't work, then he becomes president. Now we've got this dirt that we can blackmail the president of the United States for. And this is with, and that's what I said about Bill Clinton when people said, oh, well, that's just his personal sex life. No, it's not. When you're the president, that is blackmail shit.
Right.
That means that your decisions are now guided by you protecting your own ass instead of what's guided on what's based the best thing for the American people.
Right.
So it does matter. When you're a president, things do matter that don't matter when you're a private citizen. So, yeah, it's very concerning. And interestingly, the hearings that were held, I believe, this past week into the January 6th commission.
Are they actually still doing this?
They're still doing it.
Wow. So, I'm surprised they haven't given up on it already, to be honest.
Well, you know, these kind of investigations are oftentimes last years and take millions upon millions of dollars and nothing ever happens to anybody. It happened right? to Hillary Clinton, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages. And when they say, oh, well, Hillary just, they didn't even do anything about her. Well, they did try.
Oh, you mean like...
They spent like tons of money. The
Iran-Contra, the 9/11 commission, like fucking all of these investigations.
Yeah, they're all jokes. Never turn out. Because nobody ever gets, well, I don't know, like Ollie North did get prosecuted. Like some people.
Ollie North got slapped on the wrist and more book deals than he could ever want. Like, I know.
I mean, nothing serious happens to him. Whack. But anyway, so some of the most, they start from the outside in. They start with the people on the very outer edges and they work their way in. So that they get all these information for these people. And then as they work their way to the more important people, what they're trying to do is create a box that important person can't get out of. They try to get something where they got this person in a box. And then that person is supposed to give them the main piece of meat on the person they're trying to get, which obviously is Trump. So the circles are, but the problem is people lose interest in it. Like you said, it's like watching Oak Island. And I said a couple weeks ago, we did an episode, they're going to find gold on Oak Island before Trump ever sees the inside of a jail cell.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're trying to maneuver. So what they found out, Jared Kushner actually sat down with him voluntarily for an interview, which I find just extremely interesting because all of Trump's inner circle is like, oh no, presidential, you know, with the president claimed executive privilege and we don't have a right. They're all claiming, which Trump, the courts already said, Trump has no executive privilege. Executive privilege now belongs to Biden.
It's sitting president.
So it's bullshit, and they all know it's bullshit. And now they've
held, they just know that if they repeat it enough, it's true. So
they've held Steve Bannon in contempt of court, but we don't know whether the Justice Department's going to do anything about it. Now they went after Mark Meadows and a couple other high-level Trump advisors, saying like they have to come in and give us their testimony, which all they got to do is plead the Fifth. Like we don't have like thumb screws that we can put on these people,
right?
So all they got to do is go in there and say I plead the Fifth. But what they're trying to do is make it, get them in a position where it's more advantageous of them to just submit information than it is to, you know, fight it. Okay, so what they found out was there was text messages that went back and forth between Mark Meadows and Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's wife that are extremely disturbing, if not illegal, where she's basically telling people to keep fighting when the insurrection was happening. You know, she was urging people, saying, you know, basically the people that are out there want to hear that you want them to keep fighting and whatnot. So here you have the wife of a Supreme Court justice involved in an attempted coup of the United States government. Now, Ketanji Brown was questioned about whether she would recuse herself from an up-and-coming Supreme Court case against Harvard, I think it is, where she went to college for law school. And she was like, well, that's what I plan to do, okay? So they want her to recuse herself from something because she's personally involved in it. Well, how is Clarence Thomas going to sit on cases and has already probably sat on some cases involving the insurrection when his own wife is involved in it? And he knows that any judgment that he makes regarding, quote, people involved in the insurrection involves his fucking wife. And the only thing I can say is that, and I said this a long time ago, if the people that did what happened on January 6th are not fully brought to justice, that was just an introduction. And, you know, when you've got half the people of the United States thinking that that was a glorious day in America, we're in deep shit. We are really in some deep shit. Because, you know, like we were talking about the super soldiers earlier, the one thing that governments have always wanted to figure out how to do is to get people to have the kind of obedient indoctrination like the Japanese who took their planes and literally kamikaze themselves at Pearl Harbor. The terrorist extremists who flew the planes into the buildings and killed themselves. The bombers who explode themselves on buses full of children. People that have reached a level of indoctrination and extremism where even their own life means nothing to them. Where do we go after that? I mean,
I don't know. I think America isn't far off from seeing the days of people being willing to sacrifice everything in belief of a change. Because, you know, if you ever watched videos and have ever seen any of the conflict in the Middle East outside of the propaganda you've been fed by America, mm-hmm. and you see the atrocities that we committed against people or hired other companies to commit against people, mm-hmm. the amount of innocent people that were killed and it was covered up, or, you know, it's not easy to see why us staying over there just bred more terrorism.
For sure.
It's just not hard right. to see that, right? And some of those people, I think, turn to quote-unquote what we refer to as terrorism, but what they probably refer to as like defending their own
freedom fighting.
Yeah, I mean, freedom fighting. They just have nothing left to lose. They have to fight for it. That's mm-hmm. it. I mean, it's not just like we don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. We'll sacrifice our life because we don't care, but it's just like, what greater purpose could you ever have in life than this? And I start to wonder if America, you know, maybe not in the next few years, but maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the line, that we won't get there, because our whole system of capitalism is crumbling. I make jokes about like the late stages of capitalism all the time, but like we're there.
Mm-hmm.
We're
mm-hmm.
fucking there.
For sure.
You know, and I think as we further see, my brother and I were talking about it the other day, because did you hear about the New York prosecuting attorneys that resigned
right
over basically from what I understand is that they haven't made any statements on it, but the way that it looks is that they have evidence proving that Trump, you know, committed criminal acts, and they want him prosecuted, and their boss was like, no, we're not gonna do that, and then they both fucking resigned, and they were mm-hmm. like, fuck that. And I'm like, well, here it is out in the open. Like, we all know that the rich and powerful do not ever find their day right. in court.
Mm-hmm.
But as that becomes more blatantly obvious, I mean, the justice system is one of the key things that holds the fabric right. of our society right. together. And as time goes on and people just become more painfully aware that the police are only here to protect private property and corporate interests, mm-hmm. and the justice system doesn't really serve justice to anybody except for against poor people. I mean, it's just so fucking right. obvious. I was thinking that the other day, and it's also finding its way, like Russell Brand was talking about. Those messages are finding their way even
into the subconscious,
mm. and it affects everything in society.
It absolutely does.
I was watching that show, The Walking Dead, right? It's on its last leg. I think this is the last season. But they all, I mean, and like, here's warning for anybody who hasn't watched the last season. If you don't want it to be spoiled, don't listen to the next 10 minutes of this, but They find themselves a part of this new society who has created a government and classes of people. Mm-hmm. And you can work your way up. And they're like recreating the old world. And they have a politician and this and that. And like, you see this with people who have like lived out here with the zombies, like kind of wild, wild west, that are like, hey, we don't want to go back to that. And like, mm-hmm. some people are like, well, we do want to go back to that, but we don't want to make it like how it was before. Like, we want everybody to be fucking equal here.
Right.
Like, and then this guy who's like a worker fucking snaps and he like holds somebody hostage or whatever. When the police investigate, they find that this guy's like basically like an eat the rich type uh-huh, dude. He's uh-huh. like not, he doesn't want to rebuild society the way it was before. He feels like everybody should be equal. And I'm like, holy shit, this isn't like a mainstream TV show right now.
Uh-huh.
They are feeding this shit to the masses right uh-huh. now. And I was like, hell yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know how many people are really still watching the fucking Walking Dead at this mm-hmm. point, but I'm like, they are putting imagery of a totalitarian government who's crooked and favors like keeping the wealthy rich and using the poor people to like do the dirty work and fight the dead. Like, how could it be any more of a message of being exploited by the right. upper classes?
Right.
And then like the people on the bottom are going to fight back. I'm like, holy shit. I can't believe this.
Right.
But I'm like, good. Pump that imagery in there. Well, it's funny that you people's minds. That
because I used to give all kind of examples of how, you know, the media is feeding a message to society, America specifically, through even, you know, American Idol and all these cooking competition shows and all that. You know, if you watch them, one of the things they do is they give you a little background on all the characters and why they're competing in the show and why it means so much to them to win.
I know.
That's to make you have a little bit of an investment in each one as a human being. But then they're going to get eliminated.
And they like cranked that shit up too. I remember right.
And
last
the reason
time I tried
is to desensitize you to the fact that everybody's going to die for me to be at the top.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fucking.
That is the fucking message.
It's crazy, but you're right. That is the fucking message.
It's been the message forever. If you
they're
watch
pumping
80
that
shows,
shit up too, because like way back when American Idol was like a huge deal. I remember watching it and everybody always had like, oh, their story, their try. But like when I watched it just a year or two ago, it was like some extreme shit. Like every single person had this extremely devastating story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit. Like you can't even pick one to feel bad for because they've all fucking got
right.
something.
Yes.
Like, God damn. Like just go up there and perform. Like,
no. And that's the reason. It's because the whole exercise is an exercise in you emotionally attaching to someone who's going to lose so that it basically psychologically trains you to understand like Survivor, all these island shows where people go on there and they subject themselves to all kinds of stuff to be the last one who survives to get the prize. Look at what's the Korean show that came out?
Oh, Squid Games.
That's the ultimate.
I know.
Of how much violence can you endure and how much sociopathy can you experience so that you don't die? Like, that
yeah. Have
is
you ever
the
seen
culmination.
The movie?
No, but
have you ever seen the movie American Psycho with Christian Bale?
No.
He's like a guy who works on the stock market and he's mm-hmm. also like a sociopathic murderer. And it's like, it just makes sense. Like, you should watch the movie because it's a very good, it's so funny too because I saw some guy who's bickering with me about this movie about how like women just don't get that movie. Like, it's a very masculine movie that women wouldn't understand. But like a woman directed it. So fucking makes
she wasn't
sense.
A descendant of Ayn Rand, was she?
No, but it's like, it is a good movie to show that like those people, like, it you if you're gonna work in that world, you're if you're good at it, you're probably a sociopath.
Well, they recruit sociopaths, at least England did. They did a psychological study, and the purpose of it was to find people to work in you know, at Wall Street, on basically the British Stock Exchange. And they gave high points to people who showed sociopathic behavior because they're the best traders. And you know, it's like the Devil Wears Prada. You have to be ruthless, you have to be, but anyway, that's the whole messaging behind all of these survival shows, competition shows, from Big Brother to whatever, is all that there can be only one surviving person, and if that's going to be you, you have to be willing to kill and get rid of anybody, no matter how sympathetic their story is. So okay, to me, that was breeding us for basically the downfall of capitalism. That they capitalists and people in top-down government, whether it's the church, whether it's the military, whatever, they don't want people to collectively get together, because the only power they have, as Howard Zinn likes to say, in people's history of the world, the only power that they have is the power that we give them. And when George Floyd was murdered on the street, and the Black Lives Matter protests, some of them going completely out of control, setting fires and people, you know, whatever, getting beat. And they said, oh, this is anarchy. I said, no. Anarchy happened the moment that George Floyd was murdered by a law enforcement officer in broad daylight. That act showed people that the law is not there to protect you.
Right.
That
no law,
that
no
was the
order.
Ultimate act of anarchy. Enforcement person committing the highest crime in broad daylight was the start of anarchy. And it showed people that the only power police have, the riots showed the only power police have is what we give them. If right. we say we're going to obey, if we say we're going to comply, look at what happened up in Seattle. They fucking gave up. You know, Trump was threatening to send a National Guard in there because the local people just were like, listen, whatever. They want that block. We're just going to let it. I mean,
it's so crazy, too, because I feel like it's weird. The older I get, the less I think that maybe I'm the crazy one.
No, you're not crazy.
And I think that sometimes I'm hard on myself thinking that I'm like too extreme in my emotions or how I feel about things, take things too personally to heart, keep things in my head longer than I should. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then I start to think like, no, it's not me. Like, it is the rest of the world. Because, and a meme, like, perfectly represents this. Because did you see on CNN where they were showing images of the war in Ukraine? And then, like, because you know how they do. They have, like, the bar at the bottom. And then they've got, like, this panel right here where there's people on the side. And they've got this image right here where they're showing a video. Well, they were showing a video of, like, the war in Ukraine. And then it cuts to a commercial of, like, an Applebee's commercial with all these people, like, singing and dancing. And it's an advertisement for Applebee's. And it's just, like, so fucking painfully obvious that we just love exploiting just this torturous shit that's happening over here so that we can sell things. Mm-hmm. It's, like, so fucking America. It's just so typical. And I'm like, everyone else has been desensitized to that shit because of stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't bother you to see this horrific shit on TV for more than a second because in a blip, then you're going to be seeing, like, people dancing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's you. It's not me.
Right.
I'm going to go to bed tonight and think about that shit and be horrified by it. Mm-hmm. And probably be in a state of depression for a fucking week thinking about it and how helpless I am to do anything to change it. That's the normal response, I feel like.
Right, yeah.
The fact that other people treat me like my response to it
is overblown
or is not normal. Like, it shouldn't bother you or you can't carry it around like that. No, that is the normal response. Y'all are fucking nuts. It wasn't until I started talking to people in the mental health field that were like, no, like, you got to find ways to cope with it so it doesn't dominate your life. But, like, it's not, your response isn't unnormal.
Right.
It is a normal response. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, fucking finally, thank God. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not fucking nuts. Like, this shit is nuts.
Right.
You know, I've learned to have to limit, like, the shit that I take in. I was telling you before we started where I want to do an episode on it eventually. Talking about America's funding of Saudi Arabia and how that funding impacts the crisis that's going on in Yemen. And I'm like, well, if you ask me, it's literally American dollars that are responsible for the images that I'm seeing of starving fucking children. Like, it's our fault. Stop giving them money. Like, and I thought about that shit and I obsessively read about it for days on end and, like, printed photos out to put on the board in here so that I would remember how important this is. It needs to be. But then it's like I got to step back and be like, no matter how much you know about this or how many people you tell, it's still happening. Mm-hmm. So, like, walk away from it for a little fucking while, dude, or you're going to drive yourself to drink. So it's like.
Right. And I mean, I've heard and read about people. I don't know you personally, but I've heard and read about many people who become obsessed and actually become, you know, they go to work for organizations. Or they get radicalized. But but a lot of them will go to these countries and try to save orphans and do things like that. And after so many years, they get swallowed up by it and commit suicide.
Because, I can see that.
Because they see it. They do make a dent, but it's like a drop in the ocean compared to the level of stuff that's still going on. And they end up feeling like they are in it alone. And that's why, you know, not like we're doing anything groundbreaking here, but what I feel like the root of the problem is getting everyone to have a different level of awareness. But the problem is we're working against people who have enormous resources, who have enormous access to people's metadata to figure out how to manipulate their brains. So it's very hard to get people to wake up. And just for example, the Ukraine thing. I saw somebody in our neighborhood who I know is kind of on the right, who has a Ukrainian flag hanging up. And I was a little bit perplexed because, you know, Tucker Carlson, he's got millions upon millions of viewers who he's gone on there and said, why do we even support Ukraine? Why aren't we on Russia's side? And, like, nonsense, complete, utter, ridiculous nonsense that his viewers somehow still managed to wrap their brains around. So the far right is not in support of Ukraine. And that goes way back to GOP ties to Russia. But I think, okay, so what is it about the Ukrainians that inspires the person who's completely politically opposite of me to go, yeah, those people are, we appreciate them. And I go, well, maybe it's a sign that right winger and me can at least at the very base level see human beings being murdered. We can at least agree on that's fucking wrong, right?
Right.
So
right.
maybe when our society falls apart, my neighbor across the street who has a Trump 2024 flag won't come across the street and shoot me because I have a Bernie bumper sticker. Maybe if we can agree that what's happening to the people in Ukraine is horrible, we can all treat each other at least on a base level. Like, I don't have to kill you because I just, because I get to the point where I fear that that's where we're going to end up, right?
Well, and but, I think that's
but
the difference
wait,
between...
let me finish this. But you have to realize that some of those people on the right who see the Ukrainians and their patriotism and their willingness to pick up a gun think they equate them to the January 6th crowd. You see where I'm going with this? They see the January 6th heroes and the people that were willing to pick up a gun and, or pick up a weapon and go to the Capitol and remove the foreign corrupt people that were trying to take over our country. They see those January 6th insurrectionists as the people in Ukraine fighting against the Russian tyranny and the Democrat tyranny here. So we think we're all on the same page.
Well, and
but
I mean, you know, here's the thing too, and I said this about the January 6th people. I've said it several times that I don't disagree with their overall idea. It's just their idea that it's just Democrats is wrong. If they were a group of armed people that showed up to the Capitol and they were like, "We're done with rich politicians controlling everything and blah 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 blah, the whole nine yards," but to include all of the corruption, I would be like, wow, these are people actually standing up against shit that's wrong. But it's like, they're not doing it for that reason. They're just doing it because another
reasons.
Side told them to. Right.
Right.
This isn't a, let's make our country a better place and fight us, the working class, against these tyrannical rich politicians. It's just, they're just being used as pawns.
They are.
So
but
it's not their act itself. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm back and forth because I'm not always a person that says violence is the wrong answer.
I think that there are times when it's justifiable, but, you know, to get a group of people together and premeditatedly fund an attack on somebody, I mean, there's other ways to destabilize corruption other than going at it with a gun. I just think, like, yeah, if somebody came in my house to harm me and mine, I could leave their cold bloodied body on the doorstep and not feel shame about it because I have to protect my family. But the people that go on the aggressive move to, quote, remove tyrants, the Russian soldiers that kidnapped the mayors in Ukraine, you know what they said? We didn't kidnap them. We arrested them. Well, that's what the Michigan guys who went and were going to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer, they said, we weren't kidnapping her. We were going to arrest her and put her on trial. So if you look at the verbiage between what I see is what the Russians say, and then you look at the right-wing extremists, I see the right-wing extremists as equivalent to the Russians.
Well, I guess the only difference between a terrorist organization and justice being perpetrated by people that we've placed in power is who has the majority and where's the democracy.
There you go.
But in America, we see get rid of gerrymandering and the Electoral College, and we're a Democratic country forever. We're Democrats. Mm-hmm. And probably at some point, when people don't feel like they have to vote for Democrats just to outweigh Republican evil, a progressive country. Because if you look at the way that people vote, Republicans never win the popular vote. If it was one person, one vote society, there are, by numbers, more people on the quote-unquote left than there are the right. There's just more of us. So if an extremist right-wing group, which first of all is already a minority because not everybody on the right is an extremist.
No.
So they're already a minority group. They don't get to fucking kidnap people. But that's what I say about the January 6th thing. If this was a group of majority Americans or a group that represented the majority of Americans, I think I could get behind what they were doing. It's not the violence that I have an issue with necessarily, or the act of protesting or the act of dismantling a corrupt government. It's just those people aren't the majority. They don't represent the majority, and they're not attacking the right people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I mean, I could pick that situation apart, but so their equation to January 6th to the Ukrainian people is all kinds of fucking twisted up.
Well,
it's
I
not
see
the
that,
same.
But I'm saying that when I see them and I go, wow, like maybe they see things the way I do, I also have to consider that maybe they look at the Ukrainians as true patriotic freedom fighters and they go, yeah, that's what we had. Because you know that's what they think January 6th was.
Right, yeah, they're delusional.
So that's why there's no inconsistency with them when it comes to Ukraine.
I don't know how that cognitive dissonance works when they're confronted with...
what happens on the left, too.
I mean, I just don't get that. Because if you just present the numbers, it's like, yeah, okay, I get what you're saying, but like the Ukrainians as a majority mm-hmm. are fighting them. You guys, the right-wing extremists, are the minority in our country.
Right.
That's
so
not a
democracy.
The reason
I say we should support Ukraine is because, okay, we went into Iraq and Afghanistan, which we did a whole episode on Afghanistan, a couple, I think. Why, you know, when Biden pulled everybody out, why it fucking collapsed so fast. So I've been reading this book called The Afghanistan Papers, and basically they go through a bunch of interviews that were done with military people from every level of the military that served in all different kind of roles, economic advisors, military. I mean, it was everybody. They interviewed, they called them lesson learned interviews. They were conducted by a university and basically weren't supposed to be public. But the New York Times sued for the information because they said, we have to know what happened in this war. And the public has a right to know. And so anyways, they won. And all these interviews, this journalist went and listened to all these interviews. And there's so many stunning, just mind-blowing things that went wrong in the war. And every president knew that when Biden pulled out what happened, they all knew that's exactly what was going to happen. They knew it the whole time. So they just kept making promises they were going to get out. But every single one of them knew they weren't going to have that happen on their watch.
Right. And I kind of said that about Biden is that I'm not saying I agree with pulling out or that I disagree. I guess I don't really think I have the qualifications to make a call like that. Although I do believe the longer we stay there, the more terrorism it breeds. So, I mean, I can see that. But if I can say anything, that's absolutely correct. Everyone fucking knew there was going to be an end eventually, and the guy who finally ended it, it wasn't going to be like when Obama was like, oh, the war is over and all these claps.
Right, yes.
We knew that the guy who pulled him out of there was going to get kicked for it.
Yes.
And Biden did it anyway. So yeah. I'm like, clearly he's not. I mean, maybe it's because he knows that he's not going to run for re-election.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just like, that was the other thing I was going to ask you about too. Did you hear about the tax he proposed for the wealthy?
Jovi told me about it, but I didn't actually.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about it. Maybe we'll touch on it next week, but I'm just like.
And I actually heard a right winger at my work defending it to another right winger.
Wow.
Saying like, well, no, it's not going to affect us. It's just going to, because.
Over 100 million.
Yeah. Like, it's not going to affect you, dude. And that's what she was telling him is like, it's not, it has nothing to do with you. It's only people that make 200 million or something. She said, I don't know, figure she threw out there some ridiculous amount of money. It's like not going to affect you.
Right.
And what I keep trying to convince small business owners who are the petty bourgeoisie, if you will, that if they taxed Bezos and Walmart and these people and gave that money as, what do you call it, what they do with farmers, subsidies mm-hmm. to small businesses, you would benefit.
Mm-hmm.
They're crushing. You don't, I mean, I get it that you believe in a free market, but do you think that Amazon crushing every little small business out of business is... That's a good way to be, because you're going to be gone
right.
eventually. Walmart and Amazon will be all that's left. You better realize what side you're on here, you know? But anyways, on Afghanistan, there was a couple quick points from that book I wanted to bring up. If you get a chance to listen to it on audiobooks, it is a good listen. There's so much information in there. And the thing I like about it is these are quotes and interviews from people of all perspectives who were there. This isn't somebody going, well, I think because of this and that statistic. No, these are people that were there that said, this is fucking not working. So one of the biggest problems I got out of it was that we didn't understand the difference between, we didn't really understand what extremism is. So in other words, if you get two people who have a dispute, okay, about a particular issue, and they have a difference of opinion, like pro-life and pro-choice, okay, there's people that have different, very intensely strong opinions of what we should do about that issue. But in our country where we have the rule of law, if a pro-life person goes and blows up an abortion clinic and murders people, that person's going to be prosecuted for murder because you've stepped outside the political difference aspect now and you've become a criminal. And if you're a right-wing person, you know, and or a left-wing person, and you're say, an animal rights activist, and you go to a place where, you know, a science lab where they're doing experiments to try to cure cancer, and you blow it up and kill people, even though you're a leftist, whatever your position is, you're now a murderer. That's what the rule of law means. The rule of law means that we as a majority, like what you were saying, if the majority agrees with something and we make a law that says this is the fucking line that we all agree on, no matter what political perspective you are, if you cross that line, you're now in a whole other category.
Well,
you're called
welcome,
a criminal.
That's what I said. And it may not happen today or tomorrow, but welcome to the new world of chaos, because the more times we see officers murdering people in the street and the more times that we see the rich walk free without prosecution, the more terrorist actions and absurd, you know, grandiose attacks you're going to see.
Right.
Because
right.
you're going to get people who just at the end of the day are completely hopeless.
Right.
And they feel like they're so passionate about this thing. There's nothing they can do about it.
But there have been people from January 6th convicted of sedition. There have been people, I mean, George Floyd's killer went to jail, you know, and the other, and they're pressing federal crimes against him also. And then you had the murders of Ahmaud Arbery, you know, so we're starting to see that people are outraged and not going to tolerate this bullshit anymore. If you're a criminal, you're a criminal, you're a criminal. Okay. That's the rule of law. And if somebody's an anarchist and they're on the left, and they go and set fire to something and kill some an innocent family that had nothing to do with it, guess what? You're a fucking, you killed somebody. You have to bear the consequences of your actions too. You're a criminal. So
yeah, but then you also see people like, what's his face? Fucking Pillsbury Doughboy, G.I.
Yeah,
Joe.
It's not gonna work.
What's
all
his
the time?
Fucking name? The Kenosha kid.
To me, he had a judge that basically manipulated that whole system. And you're still gonna have, that's gonna happen. But overall, I'm saying, the majority of people, and I think even people on the left, like you and I, will agree that Kyle Rittenhouse was a victim of propaganda, a poor family situation. Like he was disturbed and he committed a crime and he should have been punished for it. But
right.
We are even sympathetic to what gave rise to him.
Absolutely.
You know,
but the fact that he wasn't punished is only going to lead to him going on to fucking probably have a movie made about him. And
well, that's a whole nother problem.
You know,
so okay, so
you don't snub that shit out, it just continues to grow. It's like a virus.
So I think one of the biggest problem was that when we defeated when we got the Taliban down to a very, very small, they were pretty much ineffectual, which happened relatively quickly. They decided, well, we can't kill our way out of this, so we're gonna have to talk to them. We have to try to bring them to the table, make them a political party, and talk to them like they did Sinn Féin in Ireland. You know, we have to, if they can't talk their differences out, they'll continue to be terrorists. No, because you don't understand. Extremists don't want to talk to you. They want to cut your head from your body, you fucking infidel. This is a person you don't, Nazis. You don't talk to fucking Nazis. You kill Nazis. And in our liberal world today, we don't want to acknowledge that there's any soul we can't save. Yes, there fucking are. There are people who need to just be eliminated, okay?
Man, I say that all the time, even on, like, the just state-to-state level. I don't know why we put people with overwhelming evidence. I mean, I can see the argument for wrongful convictions and people being put to death, but, I mean, if you have a case where you know 100% this guy is, like, a baby murderer, mm-hmm. And there is zero way that it's not him, 100% convicted, guilty, it's him, why the fuck do we sentence these people to life in prison? First of all, like, I mean, if you look at it from a financial perspective, that's just not smart.
Mm-mm.
Why are we paying to house and give these people fucking medical care? Like, average people on the fucking street don't even have free medical care. So fuck that guy and feed him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck? Fuck that. They're never going to be rehabilitated back into society. I mean, if you, like, took all the people who were, like, in prison for life for violent crimes, Or any stipulation you wanted to put on it, I'm sure there's numbers we could eliminate here, and just executed all those people,
mm-hmm.
and take out the argument of, like, oh, well, the drug is patented, then find another fucking drug mm-hmm. to euthanize these people with. Whatever. Eliminate those fucking people from society. Even if the money you saved you put back into the prison system to actually rehabilitate people who've committed crimes that we are going to let back into society at one point. Like, I just never understood that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like America wants to be so fucking hardcore, like, you know, law and order, bringing justice. But it's like, then why do we let literal, like, child rapists?
Why do we let people that are in our government commit treasonous acts.
Well, that too, but I'm just like, you know, I can't even
against
believe.
Against the government. Like, George Washington, well, you think he would have sat back after the Capitol got attacked?
Well, I mean,
like
look at what we did in the fucking, after the Civil War. We, like, invited those people to come sit at our own fucking table. So, I mean.
Right. So, anyhow, we could go on for a long time about that.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Sidebar.
Okay. So, they didn't understand. Yes, you do need to kill your way out of this, and you need to make it clear that there's going to be a new system of government in place, and you can have different political opinions, different parties, but blowing yourself up and committing yourself to an ideology that requires you to murder, you are the enemy, and you will always be the enemy, and you will never be involved in politics, because all the Taliban did was play footsie, like they were going to do ceasefires, they were going to negotiate, all they did was fucking regroup, same thing Russia's doing right now. They had no intention whatsoever of ever giving women rights. Never going to happen. Women was never going to be allowed into society. They are extremists and they're never going to change. They're so committed to your ideology, they'll set yourself on fire. So stop trying to make that into a political thing. It worked with Sinn Féin. It worked with some other political parties that were marginalized, who weren't given their rights. You know, workers, early worker movements. There was some violence that happened there on both sides. And they had to fight literally to be treated like human beings. It's a wonder the slave movement didn't erupt into like a slave revolt and just murder people. So I agree with you that there's times when violence is called for, when an injustice is so unjust that it has to be stopped. There's no, it's survival. But when you're working with an extremist ideology, which people in this country are creeping and creeping and creeping toward, you cannot allow that to become the politics of just extremists, like just murder your political differences, like murder people,
right,
that
and
differ
like,
with you politically.
You know, I say all the time, like the eat the rich, and I'm a big fan of taxing the rich, but by no means am I like, oh yeah, we should fucking string Jeff Bezos up in a town square and cut his head off.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I'm not.
Come on.
I mean, I'm sure there's people on that side that think
no,
that.
No. I mean, if they, I don't understand it if they do.
But I
mean,
can see that. I can see somebody on the internet preaching that. But when right. I just to clarify, when I say things like eat the rich, that's not what I mean. I just want them to pay their fucking taxes,
right,
and not like exploit people.
So another thing that threw us down a sewer in Afghanistan was shifting goalposts. They would say, we just want to get rid of the terrorists. The terrorist training camps got to go. We got to make sure they can't be a training place for terror. And then we were in there and we're like, well, now we got to make sure little girls can go to school. That's a great idea.
Yeah, now let's rebuild. And
Now let's rebuild. If they just had roads. So one of the most catastrophes that we had over there, and I've always said that the CIA is the world's biggest drug dealers. I will always believe that. And I think it's no coincidence that when we invaded Central America, cocaine became America's biggest drug. Mm-hmm. And we invaded Afghanistan in 2001. And guess what happened in 2001?
Heroin epidemic.
Heroin exploded. Okay. So you'll never convince me the two things aren't tied together. But they say we get most of our heroin from Mexico. But
I thought it was from China.
Well, like Southeast fentanyl Asia, and Southeast Asia and Mexico.
Mm.
But then I go, well, where does Mexico get their fentanyl? Do they grow it? I mean, the point is, out of all of the opium in the world, like 90% of it is produced in
Afghanistan, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So no matter how you cut it, dude, like Afghanistan is the fucking seedbed of opium growth, okay? So we supposedly did some things where we were like, well, we're going to burn the opium fields. Bush was like, we're going to, you know, do this because better.
War on drugs.
But at first they didn't care about it. At first, they were like, whatever, they're fucking farmers. This is what they do. Let them grow opium. And then they were like, well, this is kind of a problem. And then when they started to go against it, they were like, Obama goes, well, you know, maybe if we gave them an opportunity to grow a legal type of agriculture, we could turn them around. So we spent billions of dollars building irrigation for strawberries and fruits. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm a crack dealer out there and I'm making like $1,000 a day selling cocaine or crack or heroin or whatever, and you go, well, you know, you could sell sugar for $1 a bag and that's legal. I mean, first of all, who the fuck is going to do that? Second of all, they built all these irrigation things for the strawberries, and the farmers, without understanding, they didn't have the infrastructure, the roads to transport a fragile product like a strawberry. Like, you know, even here, Walmart, you go to Walmart, sometimes the strawberries look pretty shitty. And we got great roads and refrigerated trucks and shit. They ain't got none of that in Afghanistan. So you grow great strawberry in the field and it's a fucking pile of mush by the time it gets to the grocery store. Not thinking ahead. But even though the strawberry idea failed, they had great irrigation for the next year's poppy growth. So yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, did we really not think about it? Or was this just a way to spend billions of dollars to help produce opium? Okay. So, and there was corruption in the U.S. government and Afghanistan. When it come to all this money, we were spending billions of dollars. Guess what? Bunch of corrupt people, con men, jump into the act. They had double books in Afghanistan. The banks had double books. The guy that ran the only bank in Afghanistan was a corrupt motherfucker, stealing money, embezzling money, completely blew up. They tried to cover it up. That was a big problem because you had Afghans running to the bank. And it's like, man, didn't this happen in the 1930s? Like all the rich people that were in charge of the banks and stock market took all their shit out. And then the people went to the bank and they were like, we're sorry, we don't have any money. We can't give you your money that you put in the bank that you earned. We can't give it to you because we don't have any money. And that same exact thing happened in Afghanistan. So now they fucking hate banks. They don't believe in financial system. So what do? Go back to farming opium poppy because that's how they can feed their family. And then the murders of civilians by Obama's airstrikes. And I say Obama because it happened under every president, but he ramped them up.
Mm-hmm, he really did.
Hamid Karzai was considered a rare find. A lot of Afghans liked him because he was one of their own, Pashtun, and he had support of Americans. He was educated in the Western world. So he was like loved by everybody, so to speak. His brother was the biggest corrupt piece of shit and was doing all kind of criminal shit and was all protected because his brother was the president of Afghanistan. So that tore them down some. But whenever the other thing that happened was Hamid Karzai was like, listen, people want to have faith in me as their president. But when Americans are here blowing up wedding parties and murdering women and children with drone strikes, how do they expect me as their president to speak up for them and defend them? And our government was like, we didn't do that. And Karzai was like, bullshit, yes, you did. So they did this big investigation and found out, yeah, American fucking blew up a wedding party and killed like 55 fucking people in a family, old women, babies, children, whatever, fucking destroyed this entire family at a wedding party. We lied about it, denied it, and then when it was proven, we're like, well, we don't think it exactly happened the way, but we'll concede that there was some damage that shouldn't happen.
And it never matters either, because when it hits American media, literally all we have to say is like, well, yeah, it may have been a party or a wedding, but like, That family, the father and his brothers were terrorists, and you know, just they brought that tragedy on themselves because they had, you know, relations to blah blah blah. I mean, that's how we always fucking explain it away.
So that number five on my list is four is politically motivated lies and propaganda. So every time that Obama made a misstep, the Republicans broadcast it on TV. Every time Bush made a misstep, the Democrats and Trump, it becomes a political issue to where. Yeah, it's a fucked up, messy situation, but by tearing apart the other side every time a mistake happens, all you do is make the entire process look failed. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did, given the fact that pretty much everyone on both sides of the aisle over 20 years said, this war is a piss. Why are we there? Like, what are we even doing there? So they had the inconsistent and even complicit policy with opium, the lack of an Afghan desire for true change. And I say this, and I wrote in here, similar to Vietnam. So we supposedly went to Vietnam because we're like, oh, you know, the North Vietnamese are trying to implement communism on the South Vietnamese, and they don't want to be communists, and we're going to help them fight off the communist aggression and blah, 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 and all this about communism. Probably the people in South Vietnam, they were farmers, and probably they understood communism as a fine way of life. Like, I don't think they were flag-waving, like, we got to be nationalists. It was all us implementing that on them. And if a people doesn't have a genuine desire in their own heart to fight for the idea of a country where certain things are communally respected and where we can all agree this should be a law and that should not be a law, you're fucked. Che Guevara figured that out. One of the greatest revolutionaries of all time found out that he could not export his style of revolution to other countries because he went to Africa and tried to do it. And the tribes were not like good with each other, and they were like competing, and their warlord was more important than the leadership. It was a clusterfuck, and it didn't work. You can't export revolution to a people who are not together on their messaging. And Afghanistan was completely disparate tribes. They didn't have anything in common. A lot of them hated each other. They had the warlords. It wasn't going to fucking work. And when you have division, who comes out ahead? Whoever's the strongest. So when we pulled out, guess what happened? The army collapsed. The people collapsed, and the Taliban became the strongest element in it, and they're in charge right now. So if we want to go in and try to foster a country to change, what we have to do is show them what freedom looks like. That it's worth dying for. And the Ukrainians had that. They have it. That's what's going to make them survive Russia. And Afghanistan couldn't do it with 20 years of our help. Because they don't have a consistent feeling. Of every person they interview, what do they say? Glory to Ukraine. Because they are patriots and they do love their country. And if we don't figure out in this country that we got to put our political divisions to a certain sub-level of, and it has to be like we all agree on certain things, like the rule of law and like not attacking your capital and shit, we got to at least get there.
Well, and that comes with, you know, not keeping people in a state of desperation. I mean, we live in a country where the majority of people are one, you know, medical incidents away from bankruptcy or don't have health insurance at all. And God forbid they get sick and they lose their job and they lose everything that they've worked for in a matter of a couple of weeks or a month. You know, no one can have savings accounts anymore and people aren't promised to keep their jobs. And I mean, like, look at all the shit that people deal with. So it's like they latch onto politics as their last hope of enacting some type of change that's going to make their life better. So it feels like life or death.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
Right.
I can remember when people were speaking about when Obama got into office and they were talking about Obamacare and the amount of people that went up and spoke like, I would have died if it wasn't for Obamacare,
mm-hmm.
or my child would have died,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't have access to this medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? Like, it is life or death. Poverty is life and death.
Every day.
That's it.
Every day.
I mean, just, it's not even about like, oh, people don't have access to food, or how about just like living in dangerous conditions or dirty conditions, mm-hmm. or having shit education or horrible healthcare where things that shouldn't be overlooked are overlooked, or overloaded doctors who just aren't catching things because they're fucking exhausted. I mean, yeah. it's a whole fucking system. West Virginia is like a perfect example of it because people here are overworked and underpaid. We have a terrible healthcare system. Like, it's a fucking nightmare. I mean, there's places in West Virginia that don't even have clean drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talk about, I know in politics and local politics and West state politics, they're like, oh, well, there's still places in West Virginia that don't have access to internet. And I'm like, what about the places that still have dirty water that they can't drink? Just fucking priorities all over the place, dude. So, I mean, I try to look at it that way, too, is that we're never going to get to a point where politics are going to de-escalate, where we can just sit down at a table with each other and Thanksgiving can go back to being regular Thanksgiving instead of people fist fighting over politics and, you know, in a family. We're never going to go back to that point until people are not fighting for their fucking lives.
Yeah. And I have found, though, that talking to people about the real experiences you have when you're poor, you know, when, well, like, for example, if a businessman says, well, I don't believe in taxes, you know, and they want to tax the businesses, tax the business, tax the rich, you know, and all these welfare people, they have this idea that everybody's on welfare. It's like, well, I should be able to work and keep what I have, what I've worked for. Okay, well, let's stop and think about that for a second. What if you're a person who has worked every single day of your life, and then you have a health problem, and because you don't have health insurance, you lose everything? Is that fair? Do you get to keep? Do poor people get to keep everything they work for? I mean, when you start talking to them about, well, a friend of mine, you know, she had cancer, and her insurance company wouldn't cover her cancer treatment, and she died.
You know what's crazy about those conversations is a lot of times when I start conversations with people that have the mentality of, well, just pull yourself up by the bootstraps. And I'm like, okay, well, let me tell you a story about this person I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, you pick a story that they absolutely can't argue with.
Yeah.
It's of no fault of their own. And then they come to they're like, well, I mean, it happened to that one person, but, you mm-hmm. know, that's just an unfortunate circumstance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they just think it's just that one. And it's like, you could give them 100 stories like that. And they're mm-hmm. still like, well, it's still not the majority of people. And it's mm-hmm. like, but it is. And I don't know how to break that.
But you know, I think when you talk to people like that, some people, it does sink into their psyche. And my one last thing, because I know we're running out of time here, on Afghanistan, and I think it feeds into the whole Q phenomenon, is Afghanistan culturally, apparently, and I had heard this, but I thought it was just like rumors and denigrating of Arab culture. Apparently, the men there do have sex with young boys.
Yeah, I've heard
pedophilia.
That. I've heard that. A couple different documentaries I've watched have talked about that. Like, the soldiers were, like, you know,
horrified.
Yeah, they were horrified because they give these American soldiers and they put them in these groups of men. And they're like, here, train these men to be soldiers. And then they, like, see the shit that they do.
Right.
And they're like, how the fuck are we supposed to train these people as soldiers and pretend like they're the good guys when we know they're, like, raping kids behind closed doors? Like, and I mean, and I can't disagree with that.
And they were told to ignore it.
Yeah.
They were told this was just a cultural thing. And we wonder why our soldiers who have been going to Afghanistan for 20 years and coming home are a little bit sensitive about culture wars involving pedophilia. Gee, maybe because they have PTSD from having to fucking turn their back on a child who was being sexually abused by an older Arab man who was supposedly there on their side. Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy. And, you know, I understand cultures are different, but like I said, it's a commonality. There's a commonality among human beings where we're all starting to come to a world consensus where we agree that women, if they choose to wear a hijab and not drive, that's completely their, that's what they want to do. That's in their, that's their prerogative. But no one should be forced to be subjected to humiliation and torture and abuse. And if you give people the opportunity to leave that environment, say, well, we're not going to change your culture, but we're going to allow people to leave your culture who don't want to be there. That culture will fall apart. Because who is going to choose to live in that? I mean, there will be some who will say, this is the way my family's always been. You see it around here.
Mm-hmm.
People that say, beat your kids when they're bad.
Yeah.
Well, we know that's a bad thing to do. But all my daddy beat me. I think it's good, you know.
Or women who stay in, like, you know,
abusive relationships.
It may not be, like, abusive in the sense that their husband, like, smacks them around, but you wouldn't believe how many people who I see are, like, married or in a relationship, and their husband tells them where they can go or who they can talk to, or, like, monitors their messages and Facebooks and phone calls, and it's like, they've just accepted that that's normal, that because they think that they belong to that man. And
that's,
it's
so crazy.
It's just a level of normal that's accepted in that world.
Yeah. But I think
there's a lot of conservative Christian families that are like that, too, where the women are just expected to just, you know, like, the man is the head of the household. And that's just the way that it is. Like, it's fucking bizarre. But that's just a cultural difference, I guess.
Yeah. But I think it is interesting, though. And we'll have to do another show on it. The parallels between cultures where women are subjugated. They're always patriarchal religious societies where women are extremely like demonized for their sexuality. Like, all of a man's weakness in his sexual desire comes from the woman being a fucking harlot, right? It's the woman's seductiveness that causes the man to sin. Now, that's kind of like a biblical thing going back to Eve. Like, if Eve wouldn't have seduced Adam with the apple, he would have remained perfect. So it's all the fall of humanity is all on the fucking woman. No matter what the man does, it's always the woman's fault, right? And you see in those societies where men have this almost aversion to women, they do have sex with boys. It's fucking weird. I don't know. There's something about it. Like, maybe they're so homophobic that they have to, like, I don't. It's somehow it's all interrelated because you see that pattern happening. And even in extremely Orthodox Jewish societies, women are so treated. They have to dress a certain way or they're considered, you know, whores. And extreme Christians are that way. And there's also this heavy strain of male-to-male pedophilia that goes on. So I don't know. But that'll be a topic for another day. But yeah, there's a lot of reasons why Afghan folded like a cheap deck of cards.
Well, here's to wrap this up too. I wanted to, you were talking about the, did you finish your points? You,
yes.
After, okay. So I remember watching a lot of documentaries. I'm more of like a, I know you like to listen to audiobooks, read books. I'm more of a, I have to visually see things. I guess that's what's most impactful for me. So I've been watching a lot of documentaries lately, and one really good one that my brother recommended to me was, I watched Iraq for Sale. That was a good one. And the other one was Dirty Wars by Jeremy Scahill. And first of all, that guy's fucking badass. Like, I've decided I have to, like, clear a wall in my house to hang photos of people who are, like, actually genuine heroes. And, like, you know, fucking the Snowdens and Assanges and Jeremy Scahills of the world. Dirty Wars, fucking disturbing, but like, this guy really went the distance, and he put himself in a lot of really dangerous situations what a true journalist, and it's a good one to watch. And another strange one, which, I mean, this one comes with a fair warning with it, because I found it on Tubi. They get a lot of documentaries on there, but a lot of them are, I can see why places like Netflix don't pick them up. And there's one called Propaganda, and it's made from a Korean point of view. North Korea made this documentary. And if it's probably, North Korea clearly made this documentary to be like, well, don't look at what we're doing, because look at what the rest of the world has done, and they're awful too. Which I don't agree with. But if you can filter out the reason, you know, the basically they're making propaganda. If you can filter out that they're making that propaganda for their own people.
Right, yeah.
The information that they're showing about, you know, Western culture and how we've become slaves to things that don't even matter. And some of the history of, like, you know, Britain dumping all their criminals in Australia and sure. how that. All of that shit's accurate. It's all factually accurate. Right. So, I mean, as a standpoint of, like, Americans do need a wake-up call of that.
Right.
Like, look at yourself in the mirror. You're no better than anybody right. else. But I don't like that in this documentary, Propaganda, that the North Koreans are doing it to try to excuse the shit that they're doing, which right. isn't okay, and I don't agree with that. But if you want to just look at it for, you know, the other shit that it exposes, it was a pretty good documentary. It was
called
Propaganda.
Well, here's what you got to be careful of. Because, and I've talked about this before in the show, I was a big fan of Alex Jones at one time. Because he was talking about, you know, all the things that we know for a fact that the United States government has done against its own citizens. He started out talking about the CIA and MK Ultra and, you know, the 9/11 and how it didn't make any sense. And, like, he was talking about all these things that you never heard about in school. You were never taught about Vietnam, the lies that got us into Vietnam. So he was talking about all that. And then I feel like he got so popular that they stepped in and had a conversation with him. We're like, listen, we got to lead you in this direction now. And once you get a bunch of people on a, I don't want to say an American hating, but like an American, like America's no better than other country. And where we start looking at all of our dirt, there's an element of that that can be either right-wing extremist or left-wing extremist. For example, Jimmy Dore, he went that way. He started talking about the oppression of workers and all this stuff. And then he just, over time, once he got all these views, he started shifting his messaging to the farther to the right. And a lot of leftists will criticize establishment Democrats. They will get on Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all the establishment. And they do root for AOC. But when he went off the brim and, like, started tearing down AOC and all these people, Bernie Sanders, and, like, went clear to, like, having the Proud Boys on his show, I was like, who is even watching him anymore? Because he's obviously become a tool to take people who thought they were on the left and inspire them to be supporting of a right-wing agenda. So you got Alex Jones, you got Jimmy Dore, and then you got Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan is super popular, and sometimes I feel like he's one of them people that's been bought and told, hey, you've got too much popularity. We can't let you continue to be. You got to start sending this messaging out there. I don't trust anybody. And, you know, I love The Intercept. I love Jeremy Scahill. You know, Snowden went to The Intercept and to Glenn Greenwald because he was afraid to go to Standard Media because he felt like half of them work for the CIA. So he went to The Intercept and told them the story and, you know, about the spying on Americans. And, but there's, you know, sometimes Glenn Greenwald, you know, goes into that territory where it's like, well, we're so far left and we're starting to say I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you have to not trust really anyone and look at things from almost a purely objective. And it's very hard because getting objective information is really hard.
Yeah, I would agree. But anyway, we're going over our time, so we better wrap this up. And do you have any notes you want to end on?
No, I think we pretty much got everything.
All right, guys. Well, hopefully we'll be back sooner than later, and we'll be able to expand and touch on more of these topics. I hate to say that I hope that we don't have any more major Ukraine updates other than I hope this shit ends soon because it's fucking heart-wrenching. I've been avoiding it because it really is fucking horrifying.
Well, when the Ukrainians went, when you said that, it made me think of this. When the Ukrainians went and blew up an oil facility in Russia, it was like, okay, well, you're flying over our country murdering civilians, so you're going to cry because we blew up an oil facility inside of Russia. And everybody's like, oh, now Russia's going to, no holds barred, they're going to do chemical attacks. To me, they've already done everything they could possibly do. But they started blowing up oil facilities inside of Ukraine. Does that make any sense? Because their tanks are running out of gas in a convoy on their way to a city to attack because they don't have a supply chain. So it makes sense for Ukraine to blow up an oil facility in Russia because that makes it even harder, right, for them to infiltrate the country. For Russia to blow up oil facilities inside Ukraine is ridiculous because now you're just, where are you going to get gas when you get to where you're going? They're doing things that don't even make any sense. So it's going to fail. It's going to fail badly. But and his own generals, I guess, are checking out on some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all fucking bad. But
I just hope when all the dust settles that we don't forgive Russia.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Look what happened after Crimea. Everybody was horrified when he invaded Crimea. And then it was like, we went on about our business while he was still occupying Crimea. What the fuck?
Well, on a closing note, and maybe we'll talk about it on the next episode, but if you don't already know about the Open Skies Treaty and Trump pulling us out of that and how that relates to this Russia-Ukraine thing, I suggest that you look it up and read it.
Very good.
But that is all. This is Juke signing off.
And this is Mick signing off.